guys. Where are we?
Change has come to America.
The truth is out there.
Some alien race to come down and threaten us.
The military-industrial complex.
A highly funded yet unofficial government agency.
I've now been in 57 states.
Beneath cloudy skies in the heartland of America, this is PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert Craven of Krispy Kreme over here on July the 30th, 2009. We don't have a Krispy Kreme anywhere in this town, but I believe that there are some on the Black Rock. Somewhere near the original jungle site of ancient Shelbyville.
That's right. Either that or we're confusing Shelbyville for the setting of the TV show Lost again, which has been happening a lot to us lately. So you'll have to forgive us. We've been watching the DVDs as they've been popping up to the top of our queue at Netflix. And so we're watching 5 years worth of Lost in the span of a couple of weeks, which actually is a pretty good way of watching
it. Fast forward, then we'd really be able to cram it a lot in there.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating, fascinating series of shows. And if you've not watched Lost, we highly recommend you do it. You will find the first dozen or so episodes sort of interesting, but for the most part, boring.
Because what they've done is they've taken a lot of time to slowly develop the characters and spin out their backstories.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's why when the show debuted, we watched a few episodes and then we just got bored with it.
Mm-hmm.
But now that we're watching it at the recommendation of your sister, on the DVDs and able to put them together and without commercial interruption and without.
And now that I've skipped ahead and read a few extra clues from the future, I indeed have. And it's only made me want to watch them all the more. So, if you are on Netflix or you have access to getting them at your local library or someplace goody like that, go get them.
Yeah. So J.J. Abrams, a winner on this one. So
he's there. That same crew is going to do V.
Oh, a reboot of the old TV series V, which I know that some people have been talking about because any type of any type of evil space aliens come to conquer the world, you have to kind of look for the meme there, as we did with Transformers, which I'm going to finally finish the review of tonight.
And with Knowing, which I put the review up a couple of days ago.
Exactly, you have to watch the meme because it's essentially. Or very likely to put another spin on the end game, the spiritual end game that we talk about, which is the ultimate war between the angels loyal to the Most High God and the third of those angels who followed Lucifer in rebellion. We see those themes played out in the movies regularly as, the good Autobots versus the bad Autobots and, you know, things like that.
So
we'll see how that is done by Abrams when they redo V.
Amen. There's another meme that I see coming in Lost, and those who've seen all five seasons, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it certainly appears to be that time is malleable.
Mm-hmm.
Events are changeable, and that everything is connected. And it's not a coincidence that the name of the organization that is behind many of the things on the island is the Dharma Institute.
The Dharma Initiative.
Initiatives. Thank you very much.
But there's also, and there's another theme in there that we'll talk about, I'm sure, and that's the, as we get deeper into the show, and that is the conflict between faith and logic, or faith and science, represented by the characters John Locke and Jack, the doctor, whose last name I can't remember, but played by Matthew Fox.
Shepard.
Is Shepard? Was it
Jack Shepard.
Okay, Jack Shepard, the doctor.
And his father is Christian Shepard.
Okay. All right.
Yes.
Yeah. But they're the ones who represent science and logic and tangible evidence. And whereas John Locke, interestingly, who, John Locke was considered one of the thinkers of the, what's the word I'm looking for? The Enlightenment.
The Enlightenment.
Right,
mm-hmm.
Right. Who actually provided a lot of the scriptural underpinning for the American Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
So
for the New Atlantis.
For the New Atlantis, right. So he's the one who represents faith and the role of faith in the community, on Lost. So anyway.
Well, you've also got good versus evil in there in the same way that the Dark Tower series that Stephen King wrote is good versus evil. Mm-hmm. And, well, in the same way that some of the Clint Eastwood movies, you know, ending with Pale Rider, that it's good versus evil. But neither one is completely black or white, even though we see black and white over and over again in Lost. Look at the games that are being played.
Sure.
Chess and backgammon.
Right, where the
we
pieces
see black
are black
and white.
White
over and over again. Yeah. And in fact, there's one scene in the future that I read about that I haven't told you yet. That is between the man in black and the man in white.
Interesting stuff. So we're looking forward to it, and we're kind of kicking ourselves for having missed this show all the way along. I think once it started to really get interesting, we kind of took a look at it, and my reaction was, gosh, you know, we missed so much of the backstory. Mm-hmm. I don't want to jump in now. And I've watched episodes when Sci-Fi was doing its Monday night marathons of Lost, and I'd watch for a while and think, okay, this is interesting, but I've missed so much backstory. I have no clue as to what's
going on. Well, exactly, and that's why I love being able to do it this way.
Right.
So, there you go.
So we will talk more about that, I'm sure, as we go on.
Before we go any further, I want to do something we had meant to do last night, and we're remiss. We did not thank our UK friend, Dean, for helping us out at PayPal. Lord love you. Thank you so much, Dean. And you know, Dean doesn't always agree with us, you know, as far as what we say or do. Oh, who does? I mean, come on. But, you know, Lord love him. He is out there, and he's telling us, okay, I don't agree with you here. He's very upright, forthright about his opinions. But
always cordial and always
cordial.
And that's something I have to watch myself about. And I exchanged a couple of emails with Dean about this week after the discussion that...
But don't go into details because we don't really want to.
Right. Okay. But my point being that I tend sometimes to drift into debate team captain mode, which, you know, I was debate team captain 2 years in high school. And it's very easy for me to fall back into that.
Can I be debate team cheerleader?
That'd be great. You know, debate team would have been a lot more interesting if we'd had cheerleaders, but sadly, that was not the case. It's very easy for me to go into that mode and believe that I have a God-given, you know, command to go out and bludgeon anyone who disagrees with me with my superior logic, which, number one, is not true. We're treat all those that we encounter, even those who disagree with us, with gentleness and respect, even when we're presenting our case. And secondly, is the realization, I mean, the little reminders I get fairly frequently that I'm not always the smartest guy in the room, as I tend to believe. So I have to, you know, be more humble in that regard. So, but anyway,
well, Dean,
bottom line,
love
Dean,
you.
Thank you. And also thank you
so much. And thank you to Frederick. He sent us another check. This is somebody who's been sending checks to the bunker. And, you know, again, we don't say last names because we don't have permission to do so. But, you know, we also we want to respect your privacy. And yet at the same time, let you know we got it and we really appreciate it.
Yes. So thank you very much. So diving into the news, well, we can pick up kind of a medical thread where we left off yesterday as, you know, the swarms of feet-headed flies were taking over the world.
The Black Rock.
Yeah. The vaccine against the human papillomavirus that is being really pushed by lawmakers at the state level, because in many cases the states have to insist that students in the United States of school age, girls, are vaccinated against the human papillomavirus, which is responsible for causing cervical cancer in women. Now, there are questions about the efficacy of the HPV vaccine, Gardasil.
And about the side effects.
And about the side effects, right. Number one, of course, is that it doesn't necessarily protect against all... Well, it doesn't protect against all the strains of virus that can cause cervical cancer. And secondly, there are cases where girls have suffered adverse reactions to the vaccine.
And it doesn't always work. I mean, it's not just that it's not efficacious against every strain. It's not efficacious against... all strains if you take it at the wrong age, which is why they claim you got to take it when you're really young, because only then will it more than likely work.
Yeah.
We're not guaranteeing anything.
You know, our point is this. It should be at least be, at best, it should be the choice of parents as to whether their children, their daughters, should be vaccinated against the human papillomavirus. If they feel that the risk of contracting this virus through sexual activity is great enough that they should be protected against this, then let them do it. Don't make it a mandate where kids can't go to school unless they are vaccinated against this disease. But now there are some medical professionals who believe that we need to vaccinate boys against human papillomavirus for a couple of reasons. Number one, they say that because of changing sexual behaviors, without going into detail, this can cause oral cancer in men. So men should be vaccinated against HPV. But and here's the most ridiculous reason I read. A woman who is a...
Well, I'm sorry. I got to stop you here. If it's an STD, then it doesn't matter.
I agree.
I mean, it doesn't matter what sort of behavior is taking place. If it's an STD,
right,
then it should be male and female.
Well, true. But if the virus is responsible, and I need to do more research, you know, and this is not an area of my expertise, but this is the reason that's been given, because it can lead to oral cancer in men. Men should be vaccinated against it. But another reason.
I know. No, I'm not agreeing with the people who say men should have it. I'm saying, looking only at a certain behavior and saying, in that case, because of that case, mm-hmm. because we're seeing oral cancers probably have nothing to do with HPV and more to do with smokeless tobacco.
Well, I agree with you there. Absolutely.
In the same age group.
Yes. And but another reason that they're pushing this, and is, of course, you know, you can make up your own mind as to whether or not any of these medical professionals are being wooed or persuaded by the manufacturers of the vaccine to try to expand the market by doubling the potential, you know, population who should be vaccinated. There's a professor for, I lost where she was, but anyway, there was a recent conference held on this in Australia, and it was suggested by a medical professional that we need to vaccinate boys to destigmatize cervical cancer as a female disease.
Okay, wait a minute. So, and I apologize if I derailed you in my jumping in, but because I don't have the article in front of me. Is their primary reason to destigmatize it, or is it the primary reason have proof that it causes oral cancer?
Well, the primary reason, they said, is to protect boys against oral cancer. Okay, an anti-cancer prevention strategy. But then this destigmatization was raised as an added benefit.
You know what the article that you're describing to me, and again, I haven't read it. Mm-hmm. I'm depending on only what I've gotten from you. So it seems to me that they're making the assumption that B follows A, that somehow behavior leads to cancer in these men, these young men.
Right. That would be my
guess. But I've not heard any proof.
Well, and this article, of course, because it's written for written for lay people, doesn't go into the details.
But it may intentionally not include them, because there are no details. I'll have to do some research.
Well, I think you're right, though, because it would be difficult to say that that they can isolate this virus as the cause
for
oral cancer in men.
Now, I haven't read much about it in the last few years, but my understanding up until that point was that it was coincidental to cervical cancer. In other words, they didn't know for sure that it caused cervical cancer. It was just present.
And I think that's what many critics of the mandatory vaccine charge, that this has not been proven. The link has not yet been proven. The vaccine does not protect against the viruses blamed for the disease well enough to really make a strong case that this should be a mandatory vaccine, unlike other things that kids are vaccinated against, like, you know, measles and mumps and stuff like that, where you can show a pretty good cause and effect. Polio, for example, you know, things like that. This is just one too many. Mm-hmm. It's you know, there's not a clear link. The vaccine doesn't show that it's effective enough to warrant the potential side effects. And now they're saying that boys should be vaccinated as well, because it may protect them against a virus that may cause a certain type of cancer.
Well, this
and
receives...
besides that, it destigmatizes cervical cancer, which, you know, forgive me not being a biologist, but don't you need to have a cervix to become a victim of cervical cancer?
Well, some guys might.
Okay.
I'd really like to have one, Doctor. Could you put one in? Oh, did you see the story? This is a left turn. Did you see a story about the mayor in a small town who is partially transformed, we'll put it that way, on the northern half of his body, but not transformed at all on the southern half of his body? And he still goes by he attended a meeting of school children, addressing them wearing a very skimpy halter top and a mini skirt.
No, I hadn't heard about that.
Well, apparently he thinks that that is just fine. He's been called on it by the school, and apparently there's a lawsuit pending, so we'll see what happens.
Well, we'll quickly set that story aside and move along. It's a more global import.
I'd say, you know, regardless, he's going to have to get that vaccine somewhere along the line.
And he's going to have to turn his head and cough, too.
Yes. What was he thinking? Oh, okay.
Let's stop right there. I can see the line. Let's not go any further. Oh, brother.
Somewhere Tom Horn is just driven off the road. Well,
the world
okay.
has gone mad.
It has. Well, you know, another story we didn't get to yesterday is this is really sad. Apparently, the Arlington National Cemetery has lost track of who's where. Not in all cases, but there are a few cases where they, for instance, recently there was a burial taking place. Mm-hmm. And when the grave diggers dug in, they discovered that someone was already there, occupied, but there was no paperwork on this person.
Now, isn't
Arlington, and no headstone.
The Arlington National Cemetery is where we're supposed to bury those who are being honored by the nation for service.
Our bravest, our finest, yeah.
And they're being buried in what amounts to anonymous graves?
Well, apparently the bookkeeping has suffered somewhere along the line. And the military is planning to investigate. But here's the interesting thing. The head of the investigation will be, and let me look here, I got to see the exact name, Brigadier General Carl Horst. Mm-hmm. Caitlin Horst is the cemetery spokeswoman.
Ah, the one who said, no problems here.
Yeah.
We know where everybody is.
But when asked if there was some sort of a problem with her father investigating, she said, no. I don't see why that would be a problem. But apparently the people who work at Arlington they have their doubts.
Yeah.
So the reason I bring all of this up is this is the same government that wants to run our health care.
Yeah. And that's an excellent point. And you mentioned something yesterday that I want to bring up too, yesterday off the recording, that it hasn't been that long since the very serious problems at Walter Reed Hospital in Washington, D.C. were made known. Conditions were poor, care, you know, complaints about the care and so forth. And I have no doubt that the people, the medical professionals working there are doing the best they can with what they've been given by a government bureaucracy. But bear in mind that this, as Sharon says, is the organization that wants to take over health care for all Americans. Barack Obama stood in front of us last week addressing the nation and told us that Medicare is just about bankrupt. And so our solution to the problem, in effect, is to take 50 million more Americans and put them onto Medicare, too.
In fact, he not only said it was bankrupt, he blamed Medicare for essentially ruining the economy.
Exactly. But what they want to do is take 50 million more of us and stuff us all into the same sort of system, and it's supposed to cost us less money. Now, I'm not sure. He may be using some lost technology where they go back into the past and make smart investments that mature just in time to save us.
I don't know, but I'll tell you the scene in my head is the scene from Soylent Green.
Yes, with Burt Lancaster, Charlton Heston. Yeah,
Charlton Heston, but also, one of our favorite actors,
Edward G. Robinson.
Edward G. Robinson, doing his duty.
Yep,
volunteering to die.
Yep, That's what it's going to come down to under government rationed healthcare, because mm-hmm. the only way they can sort of make it work is by cutting the available services, the amount of care being offered to these people, because they are artificially increasing demand and lowering cost at the same time, which means a lot of people who are in med school right now will suddenly find that they'd rather be accountants than doctors.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, it's ridiculous. And this is why when Missouri Representative Russ Carnahan, who is from our old stomping grounds, addressed a town hall meeting and said that the Congressional Budget Office analysis said that not only would this healthcare proposal be budget neutral, it would actually create a surplus. That's why the people in the audience there who voted him into office laughed out loud, because we're not all stupid out here.
We're not acting stupidly out here. You know, here's the thing. I can't recall what state it was. It was one of the western states. I want to say Oregon or one of that was taking a look at the jobs created by TARP, by mm-hmm. the stimulus package. And they literally said, we have over 3,000 new jobs that were created, but they were jobs that were created for 1 week to administer the distribution fund.
You know, I think what we're going to see is that the unemployment numbers, which went up again faster than expected today, the new statistics released by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, will actually start to look better in the weeks and months ahead as people who've been out of work for a year start to drop off the rolls mm-hmm. and become discouraged workers, because the way they calculate unemployment, the unemployment rate now, is that people who are underemployed, who are working maybe 12 or 15 hours a week as a a greeter at a department store or flipping burgers someplace, don't count as unemployed, even though they were previously working a full-time salaried position with benefits.
At a bank.
Yeah. And others who were discouraged from seeking employment because they've been out of work so long that they've just given up, they're no longer counted in the statistics either. When you calculate the unemployment rate, the way it was figured 25 years ago, before they started tweaking it during Bush 1 and then the Clinton years again, the unemployment rate in the United States is getting close to Great Depression levels, close mm-hmm. to 20%. Just take a look at shadowgovernmentstats.com and look at the statistics there. John Williams, an analyst, goes back and refigures the unemployment rate and the inflation rate and other statistics the way they used to be calculated. So when the government says inflation is only running at 3%, they're lying. When they say unemployment is under 10%, they're lying. And you know the old saying about numbers don't lie, but...
Speaking of shadow governments.
Yes. Oh, the shadow government.
Yeah.
This was an interesting thing that just popped up this week, and we kind of missed it a couple of days ago. The White House under George W. Bush changed the way government will operate during a crisis. If something were to happen in D.C., a terror attack, some natural disaster that decapitated the American government, the shadow government that would operate temporarily will now be under the control of the office of the White House military office, instead of under FEMA, which is the way it used to be. Now, this is just one more thing that the Bush administration did mm-hmm. that the Obama administration has just continued.
Well, exactly, because NORTHCOM came in to do what FEMA couldn't do.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, NORTHCOM is stepping in now, and they're the ones who want Gates to sign off on this so-called executive order allowing
right.
them to go into regions during a healthcare crisis.
Right. It's a militarization of disaster response.
Mm-hmm.
After Katrina and the poor response by FEMA to Hurricane Katrina, the Bush administration began shifting power to the White House military office, which traditionally has been mostly responsible for operating and flying Air Force One. Now, if there's a crisis, a nuclear attack or something where they need to get government officials to what they call the federal relocation arc, which is bunkers in West Virginia and Virginia around D.C., the most prominent probably is Mount Weather. They would do so at the beck and call of the White House military office. And so now a military officer and mostly military personnel would be responsible for the temporary shadow government that would keep control until the crisis passed.
In light of that story, I highly encourage all of you to watch Eagle Eye.
Good point. Yeah.
I won't tell you the plot. Just watch it.
It's really good. And bear in mind, the White House military office is the office responsible for buzzing New York City with Air Force One this year so they could get that photo op.
Whee!
Yeah. So just keep in mind that when you start thinking about these government conspiracies with an all-powerful government, that sometimes you still got human actors in the plan here, and sometimes those humans are not very wise.
Well, you need to have a plan because you never know what's going to happen in life. In fact, a big old volcano could erupt over in Indonesia.
Yeah, the Krakatoa is probably the biggest volcanic eruption in human memory, at least since, what was it, the one in like 1500 BC that...
it was a bit... The original Krakatoa, the one that's erupting now, is called Anak.
As in the Anakim, huh?
Exactly.
Hmm.
Son of Krakatoa.
Yeah. And there's some pretty spectacular pictures online. We'll post a link to...
Yeah, but the original one was a super volcano, which is why it was so big.
Oh. What's interesting is that there are a certain type of cloud called noctilucent clouds, clouds that kind of glow after sundown, very, very high up, about 50 miles up into the atmosphere.
And they take the really cool shapes there. You see them at night, and they sort of glimmer a bluish sort of tint.
Mm-hmm. But the first time those noctilucent clouds were ever noticed was 1885, which is a couple of years after Krakatoa exploded. Mm-hmm. So
Big Daddy.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, Son of Krakatoa is rumbling right now and looking pretty...
Well, I'm hoping that, you know, honestly, that Son of Krakatoa is sort of like Son of Godzilla, who, you know, had really cute little eyebrows, but it was basically a smoke ring.
Yeah, instead of the radioactive flame. Yeah, we don't need that.
But the pictures are amazing.
Although, you know, just wonder how many carbon offsets it would take to compensate.
But here's the other thing about noctilucent clouds is that their formation, scientists now think, is enhanced when we're in a low solar sunspot cycle.
Which we've been.
Which we have been,
which
exactly.
Which is why the Earth has been cooler the last 10 years.
We've been really about the ebb of the last 50 years. So if you read articles that have been around for a few years, you'll see that scientists, many of them NASA scientists, are looking at the solar cycles and saying that 2010, 2011, 2012 could be doozies. In fact, solar storm comes to mind.
Hmm. Like knowing.
Like knowing.
Yeah. Well, we blew
that
like
knowing,
up.
Like...
Sorry, spoiler.
But not knowing. Solar storm, no. Oh, it was knowing.
Yeah.
Yes. We've seen too many movies lately.
Yeah. Well, of course, there was that sci-fi movie of the week original starring the guy who plays the chairman's nephew on, Iron Chef America.
Excuse me, I'm feeling a little nauseous right now.
So, yeah, that's kind of a meme, too. Although I don't know that you can really count sci-fi movies of the week as contributing to the meme. Anyway, well, we've really...
Snark is going, no!
We've really kind of threaded this one about as long as we can. But if you've got comments or questions for us or suggestions, because a lot of things that we talk about do come to us by way of email from people who are paying attention to what's going on out there.
Or if you have a PID hat that you want to send us a picture of.
Yes. Do so at radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
You can join us for social networking. Now, it's completely safe. We practice safe networking here in the bunker. So you're okay to go on Facebook and Twitter. You're not going to need a vaccine to engage with us.
That's right. Oh, well, until
Lord,
tomorrow.
Lord, love it. Please, Jesus. He's coming back soon. He really is. And
come
I'm thankful
quickly.
For it.
Until tomorrow, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Gonna step up to the microphone. Say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon to get us out of here. Don't let the hard times get you down. Older days will disappear. There's a new day coming. A new days and living in the past.
edge news and analysis on demand.
This is PID Radio.